Maybe a two-man band tonight, Andy.
It's fine.
I'm interested. I hope we get a chance to talk about our 90-card extension. I don't know if anybody's had to deal with that yet who's here. But adding an extension to allow for additional players, especially in a themed cube, is not a small undertaking. And it was a lot of fun, actually. It's plat time. We ran out of time. Let's do this.
All right.
And this is the part where we talk over the video. I almost forgot to.
I was wondering if I was supposed to be talking about you can give me the cube that we should talk over the video yet.
Yeah, well, we did. We made it happen. I think it was a fine job.
Right.
Let's see here. All right. Hello and welcome. This is Season 1, Episode 5 of Plaid Magic, Cube Design Theory and Review. Although this is our fifth Twitch cast, maybe our third actual, put together in some semi-professional fashion cast, this will be our first cast that is going to be exported and available via RSS feed from MTGCast as well as iTunes. So we are going to try to speak up and we will enunciate the names of cards and do all those things that people like to do when they don't have video assistance. So we're a little low on the graphics this time. We're trying out that as well to see if we can get by with without so much visual aid. And with that, I guess we're going to start this show. So John, unfortunately, for the time being, is indisposed. I think he has some sick children on an upper level of his home he needs to attend to. He might join us for later in the cast. For right now, it's just me, your co-host, Mr. Macabre Man, also known as Daniel Bushman in the real world. And joining me is Andy, my brother, also known as Crow 13th.
Hello.
Yes, hello. I guess let's get down and dirty. We've had probably enough foreplay at this point with our extended wait time trying to get this thing going. Unless we have something interesting. I mean, there might be something special that you'd like to share. I'm not sure.
It's fun when you plug in your mic or your to do a podcast in your computer constantly blue screens on you.
Yeah, so if you guys are looking for something to do, official recommendation, Andy said that was a fun little experience for him. I'm not having that problem. My fan was crafted out of a jet engine, so I am just not going to be able to use this higher-end mic that I've purchased until I get a lower-end computer or a liquid-cooled one or something like that. All right. Do you want to do this? This was my thing. So I apologize if it's done poorly, but we're gonna roll into the plaid pack. We're gonna do a five cards in. So there are five pre-drafted cards, and we're gonna pick the next card. And so for those of you in audio land, for our audio podcast, we have five cards already picked: Grave Titan, Graveborn Muse, Path to Exile, Spear of Heliod, and Demonic Tutor. So working into some sort of black-white control-ish build here. Our picks are, in the next pack that's passed to us, are Abrupt Decay, Arid Mesa, Mirror Battlesphere, Terminus, Gavany Township, Gnarled Scarhide, Aquastrand Spider, Razorfin Abolisher, Mindless Automaton, and Bayou. Andy, you want to go first?
Sure. So, I feel like I'm supposed to pick Terminus here.
Right, certainly.
Like, everything leads up to playing Terminus. If I had Vampiric Tutor, it wouldn't even be a question right now.
Right, I mean, this is a, it feels like a Terminus, I feel like, just because it's not any other mass removal other than Terminus.
I don't think this is the type of deck where you're going to be playing Gnarled Scarhide or anything like that.
No.
We already have a bomb. We don't need Mindless Automation.
You mean Mirror Battlesphere or the mind? I mean, Mirror Battlesphere feels more like a bomb to me here. But yeah, this is a tough one. And again, this is random. I probably could have manufactured a better, more interesting pack. This is just something that could happen, you know, in drafting our cube. So these are the tough decisions that come up. And so I'd rather have this discussion than something else. Is this the moment where you say, hey, maybe I'm splashing green here?
I don't think there's really anything in here that pushes you into green too heavily.
That was theoretical.
I think it might be Arid Mesa might be a valid argument. At least one side touches it. Yeah, well, it's more or less if you get any dual land, obviously you're probably going to go with it's going to have planes on it, so.
Right, makes sense.
And I find that this deck is color heavy on both sides quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I feel Terminus is terrible in this specific build, because you don't actually, you know, you want your stuff going in the graveyard, so it's not. But I'm probably going to pick, if I'm going to be honest, probably Mindless Automaton. Not just because, you know, I can throw it in, or if I don't, you know, if I end up with a Phyrexian Arena or something else that, you know, is giving me that card draw that I'm not getting someplace else, I have that. You know, and I can always hope for magical Christmas land and have the Spear of Heliod and the Mindless Automaton out and get a couple of cards and still keep the body and possibly shoot some more counters onto it later. So I'm probably taking that here. Next pack. So we have five cards in. This is a weird one, and I saw it, but I promised myself I wouldn't change it, because obviously we've got a green-blue deck here shaping up, and we've got a Tropical Island as the last one. So we may have to say, other than the Tropical Island, what are you picking here? But we have first card, Arcane Denial. Second card, Plax Caster Frogling. Thrumming Bird. Zamek Guildmage. Triskelion. So those are our five pre-drafted cards here. And for the cards that you get passed in the next pack, we have Vindicate, Rite of Consumption, Goblin Guide, Vraska the Unseen, Wall of Blossoms, Acidic Slime, Ash Zealot, Dejin of Wishes, Windswept Heath, and Tropical Island. Hit it.
I'm thinking I'm going to go Wall of Blossoms here. It provides a blocker, lets you set up your deck, draws you a little bit of cards. It's a little bit safer, because I think this, although you have two blue-green cards that you've picked already, that's my only concern, is that there is a high possibility that you might not actually go into green. But if I'm going to go into green, that blue-green build, I love me some Wall of Blossoms.
Yeah, that makes sense. This pack made me... that was the easy pick for me, but then I started looking at this and I said, if I'm not picking Dejin of Wishes here, maybe Dejin of Wishes actually isn't going to work out for the cube. So.
But you don't have any of the... Out of the cards that you had picked, it's not like Dejin of Wishes is going to be... I think in general, Dejin of Wishes works out, but because you already have a six drop, that was the only reason why I was kind of leaning away from it.
Right.
Obviously, Dejin of Wishes, Works pretty well on any deck that you can double counters, but
right.
You're playing it more for its body and then the, you know, threat of activation for the most part.
Right. You know, I've looked at Dejin of Wishes many times, and I feel like he'd be just so much better as, like, 2 blue, 2, 0/0, comes and play with 3 +1/+1 counters. His ability removes the +1/+1 counters as opposed to the wish counters.
Right.
That's my dream. I've dreamt about that card. I woke up and it wasn't real. That's a pretty lame dream. I'm sorry. I do dream about having conversations about card evaluation, though. It's gotten to that point. So, anyway, that's our plaid packs. Next up, we are going to go into mailbag. So, mailbag generally happens at the end of a cast, but since we sent a shout out to the internet asking for mailbag items specifically for this cast, so we had something relevant and requested to discuss. We got back an interesting question. It's actually a few questions wrapped into one. So since we took a few of those items and sculpted, or Andy took a few of those things and sculpted some topical discussions around it, we decided that we would put it first, so to give some context to the discussion that we're having. So, the mailbag. For those of you at home, I will attempt to enunciate. When considering cube additions and cuts, how much do you value your playgroup's preferences versus objective card evaluation? Even within a themed cube, such as yours, a new set may include objectively superior cards that arguably should push out fan favorites or niche strategies. How do you balance a competitive environment with valuing your audience?
Yeah, I think this question comes up quite a bit. It was funny because me and Dan were talking about what to talk about in the next cast. We knew we wanted to step away from it a little bit, from talking about our archetypes and our guilds that we've incorporated into the cube, to just go into some more in-depth conversations a little bit, just take a break from it. And one of the things we had discussed was kind of what this question is, what this email's questioning, and how we incorporate it in our cube. And really, I feel like there's a couple of questions going on here. You know, the first being, when considering cube additions and cuts, how do you value your playgroup's preferences versus objective card evaluation? Also, so that's one question in itself, which is more of a question of balancing play style versus maintaining your goals that you have set for your cube. The next question here would be, when a new set comes out that includes objectively superior cards that are arguably should push out fan favorites or niche strategies. So this comes down to, inherently they're powerful cards by themselves versus cards that are synergistic and fun to play against. And then the last section of this question would be more about how do you balance a competitive environment with valuing your audience? And really, I see this as being a question of trying to keep things new and find room for new archetypes and new cards, and versus maintaining consistency and not recreating your cube after every new set comes out. So, me and Dan were talking about it, and we really wanted to just break through these questions.
Right. So I think that the first part, if we could go over this piece about considering cube additions and cuts, and so this is something that comes up, I don't know, we discuss this 2-3 times a week. So that's an interesting point for us because, again, we don't. I don't feel like we're super aggressive on card swaps because the one difference between our cube and a lot of other cubes is that you in our cube we don't get together very often. So we're talking about, you know, once every 2 months probably at the most. So that causes an issue where we can't just try out a card reasonably. Like we have to really evaluate, and so we spend a lot of time. We make few swaps. If something's objectively better, then fine. I don't know if Andy, if you want to give an example, maybe we speak more specifically about that. Your experience with that.
Yeah. Whenever. I do agree. We don't really aggressively go out seeking cards to put into the cube. It comes down to more or less when we are looking to put new cards in the cube, if we can find something that fits the role that we're trying to set. And I think the biggest thing that's helped us is over, you know, the course of us starting this cube until now, we've really started to. One of the issues that we had was that, you know, we are maintaining this cube as a group. So between me and Dan, we have to try to, you know, evaluate these additions and have the same idea and a clear understanding of what we're trying to go for, whether that be a guild or a theme or whatever. We have to really understand what role does this card play in the cube. And so I was thinking it would be interesting for us to really go over something I think is a kind of a tool that we've developed, but in most cases I think people do this instinctually. It's something that you kind of do in your head, but by breaking it down and really thinking about the steps that it takes to come to that conclusion, you can get to that conclusion a lot faster. So I like to think of it as like a cube segmentation. It's really defining what role a card fits in your cube. I didn't know if you wanted to start talking about cube segmentation yet. Or
Yeah. I'll switch over the thing. So, I'm going to iterate my understanding of our cube segmentation, and then you can go through and correct me after that. So if you can, I don't know if you can see this slide, but I think it would be appropriate because I think a lot of the mistakes that I make in interpreting it may be the same mistakes that other people make in that. So I would, you know, enjoy that, this exercise and clarification as well. So with regards, I think it makes sense for us to give an example, to just shed light on, you know, what our cube archetype is, because then we can discuss intelligently the different roles in our cube. So so in our cube, we made a conscious decision to sit at about 50% creatures. I think we're at like 51.2, something stupid. But we're about 50% creatures. So that creates a baseline and something that helps us model, make decisions in the future. On top of that, we're sitting at about we have a sub-theme of counters matter, and we have about 20% of the cards in the cube have either get counters or care about them. Then we decided that we would take sub-themes that were dictated by two color combinations that would be the minor archetype sub-theme support cards. So blue-white is blink, red-black is like an all-in aggro build, and so on and so forth. And so then, you know, that helps us make decisions about, is this a good card for our cube? Well, if it's red-black and it doesn't fit that, probably not. Or we have to change what we do with red-black. And then the top is just good stuff. Now, this is the pyramid. What I didn't add to this subsection was the side piece, which is the up and down, which is the roll filler. So now within these layered pieces of our cube that stack on and help us understand what our cube is and what it does are the utility cards. So do I need to have heavy enchantment destruction in this cube? Probably not. So we can make decisions. A creature removal is much better than enchantment removal. A Vindicate is not as powerful. Vindicate is great because it has it basically is dealing with those niche side pieces, but it's not as powerful as a I don't know, Swords to Plowshares or something like that. Just super efficient creature removal. Given that that's the major threat that you're going to be coming up, it is the most relevant and most often going to be used piece. So, Andy, if you can go ahead and correct me now, and then I will answer some chat stuff.
Right. So, think of it this way. Obviously, a tool is only as good as you can use it. So, when you're trying to think about utilizing a tool or trying to mimic something that you instinctually do, you first need to understand what kind of problems you're trying to solve. A lot of the issues that you run into when you're designing a cube is things like size. When you run into size, you have to start considering variables of, well, is there enough support for a theme, given theme that I'm trying to incorporate in my cube? Also, maintaining a feel across the board of what you're trying to do in the cube gets a lot more difficult when you go from a 360 cube to a 4 or to a 540 cube. Other things that you have to consider when you're starting to design a cube and issues run into is things like maintaining focus in your cube. You have to understand the role players and how they fit into your cube, how to eliminate as many dead cards as possible. Issues run into that as simple as like if you were to incorporate Storm in your cube. So if you incorporate Storm, you're going to run into all these other cards that are objectively dead cards for everyone that doesn't play Storm. Also, you could tell pretty quickly when you open up a pack, like when you go through a couple packs of a cube and you start realizing from the players that are drafting that they're confused by what direction they're supposed to go with. So if you don't have a lot of focus, it can cause a lot of confusion with your drafters. Other things such as power level and interactiveness, those are all things.
It can cause confusion with you as a cube builder as well. I feel like if you're confused of what needs to go in or out, then maybe that's something that's been the case with us every single time. So we're going in and, all right, we got a 90 card extension and we're going to add two Boros cards. And we can't figure out what Boros is. If Andy and I are having serious arguments about what needs to go in there, that means that there's something confused. And that's going to pass down to the players. I mean, you just have to figure it out. And that answers a lot of those, you know, objective upgrade card questions, you know, like strictly better new prints. Is it strictly better? In a vacuum, certainly, you know, but it's all relative. And start to get a feel. I really enjoy doing a cube with Andy, managing this cube together. He's done a lot more research on it. He's reading those articles that talk about the skeleton of new magic sets and, you know, the you know, the calculations that they do when they're building out and figure out that they, oh, we need a bronze sable in this set, you know, that kind of weird stuff, and I would never be able to figure out. But I think it's been super useful because it's like a checks and balances thing. Two people managing cube, I think is great because you're forced to have to come to an understanding that is able to be communicated. And if that is an understanding that can be communicated between two people, probably your drafters are going to understand it as well.
Right, and you also incorporate different like mindsets as far as the players go. Obviously, I'm a much different drafter than you are, so
yes.
I can't assume that everyone else is going to draft the same as me.
Thank you for saying using the word different drafter. That's fantastic. You're a master.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to be a special drafter.
But that comes up with us all the time. We really, you know, and I feel like I do play the role. I can understand with some help some of the higher level sub themes, but I feel like I play the role of the player in our cube management relationship. I play the role of the drafter, the person who hasn't, you know, we spent an hour and a half talking about, what was it, River Kelpie.
Oh,
at least an hour and a half talking about River Kelpie. That's
and it wasn't even talking about the card specifically. It was like whether or not it should be in the cube. It was simply discussing whether or not we should promote people drafting the card in the cube.
Right. You know, exactly. I mean, there was at least 10, 15 minutes where we're discussing, you know, the actual scenarios, and because I've never played that card, and it seems like a bomb. So, yes, video is lagging a lot, yes. No, it's on our end. I'm seeing it lag as well. Sorry about that. We're not exactly sure what is going on technical-wise tonight. Probably should have rebooted before we started here. We spent a good, well over an hour discussing. I just said, hey, well, listen, this card's not getting drafted. Andy, you're the only guy who's playing it. You know, you've made your argument. I better understand now what that card gets used for. I might draft it. Perhaps we should discuss this with, you know, give a shout out, a little promotion to this card so that somebody else might draft it. And we had a long discussion about that. Some cards you can't push. Somebody has to discover them. For me, I've had that happen several times. I mean, for me, I had never played Undead Gladiator. I didn't understand the power of that card. Andy and I had discussions about it, but until I actually cast that thing, I didn't cast it, that was the point, but until I had that card in my hand, I couldn't understand it. So it was an interesting point that I hadn't thought about, that it's also good to leave some, originally when Andy and I discussed actually this pyramid that you're seeing on the screen now, right above Just Good Stuff, we had debated on whether or not to put Easter eggs as the top thing, which is leaving that stuff for people to either accidentally or in their gradual advancement in understanding of drafting and, you know, drafting a format, especially like cube, to discover things, to discover the power, for example, of a card that we wouldn't put in our cube for the time being, Upheaval. You know, that's like a card that is, you know, the de facto example of a card in a cube that nobody understands, but everybody who's played it does, you know. I think that's been a great balance for us in our cube, having these arguments back and forth. I wouldn't take two people at the same level, or at least I wouldn't have two like-minded people doing it, but two is good. Because I'm definitely, knowledge level, I'm lower than Andy, play, draft, build, all that stuff. And I'm okay with that. I've come to terms with that. But we're also very different personality-wise when it comes to the cube. I'm much more. I want to use the word nostalgic, which is code for dirtily. Which calls to mind the half an hour discussion about whether or not we should swap out Control Magic for what's her name? Sower of Temptations. You know, I just didn't want to let it go. You know, we had a nice, beautiful beta counter Control Magic sitting in our cube and took it out. You know, it's the right thing to do. And so, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to move on to next or.
Well, no. So basically, I covered some of the issues that you find when you're first designing a cube. So when you get into cube segmenting or role modeling, essentially, think of it this way. If you were to just take 360 cards or however large a cube is, it gets very overwhelming very quickly. And then once you start that, you also will run into the previous issues I had talked about. So when I talk about cube segmentation or role modeling, essentially what I'm trying to think of it, just kind of paint a picture for you, is take a standard booster pack. On the standard booster pack, what you're going to generally get is one rare. You know, you get how many uncommons are in a booster pack?
Three.
Right. So you have three uncommons, and the rest are going to be your commons, and then you typically get one land. So when you start going, if you were to look at that and spread it across your cube, that's what I'm thinking about when it comes to cube segmentation or role modeling. And the way that I kind of incorporate it or think about it is, if you were to split, take that percentage of the commons, like what they generally have in the common level of a pack, and maybe cut it by, like, take a quarter of that off and have that be your theme, then that's going to be, like, the percentage of what you want across the board of your cube to be what your theme is. Now, the problem is that, obviously, I think there's a misconception that, well, if you have a theme cube, everything should be based around your theme. But in reality, I think it best works when you have a good balance like this. So that's why I say, if you segment it off, you can have good balance of a variety of different different cards. And what it turns into is a way for you to understand what role a particular card fits in your cube quickly. So back to what I was talking about with the booster pack. So if you were to take a quarter of that off and say that's your theme, that remaining quarter is going to be what we'd like to call, you know, the kind of gap fillers, the toolbox. That was the one part that Dan had, I would say, isn't on this, that Dan had talked about. And these are, so kind of piggyback off what Dan was saying, this is the cards that fit, that kind of betray what a color does. So obviously red needs some amount of burn, black needs some amount of removal and recursion, or whatever aspect of black you want to try to focus on. Blue needs some counter spells and some sort of, you know, board manipulation effects. That's what I mean by gap fillers. So now we have that common section broken out. The next section is going to be that uncommon level. And what that is I like to think of that section of it being more of, like we have on here, your sub-theme or your guilds. So these are going to be like the archetypes that people would draft. That I don't necessarily say they're obvious, but they're when we add cards to a particular archetype. So in our cube, what we use is the archetypes are all, for the most part, centered around the guilds. And so whenever we add a card and we have a certain section of the cube that's, you know, cut out for each archetype, so for each guild, whenever we add a card, we know what card is meant for which deck. Doesn't necessarily mean that those cards don't work in multiple decks. It's just primarily, you know, there are certain cards that this identifies, embodies this archetype very well. So when you start looking at something like Parallax Wave, that's obviously a blink card. You could play it in other decks, but that's really where it hits into. So, you know, a certain percentage, it's like really focused for that archetype. Now we get to the last section. This is going to be your rare section. Now, notice this is the smallest section of your cube. And the reason why is that if you just put in a splash of theme cards and then you have an equal amount of just good stuff, that doesn't necessarily push a player in any direction, doesn't necessarily guide a player in what they're doing, then that, I believe, is where you start getting into these power level distinction issues. And they're good to have. I think they're very important, but they probably should be the smallest part of your cube. I don't know if you agree with that.
I mean, I think it's relative. It depends on, you know, what your cube is and the archetype. Because if, I mean, you can give any example of that, and, you know, it is certainly a small subsection. I don't know that it's the smallest subsection.
Right, and I guess, so this is geared more towards ours, but this is kind of a way to, like, if you were to take your cube and think of it like a booster pack, it's a way of segmenting out certain sections and trying to figure out what roles do each cards fit into. And that's why I kind of give the booster pack example, just because it's easy to understand from a percentage level what you're looking at. Doesn't actually mean, like, we're planning on that percentage, like, showing itself when you actually open up a booster pack of, or a pack of, or cube, but it's just a matter of kind of depicting what you're talking about.
Right.
So that's how I kind of describe role modeling and whatnot.
Yeah, and I think we've discussed this at length. But I've also got the feedback from our play group the same. I mean, we've had people that, you know, went through the process of draft. They're not drafters. You know, this isn't something they do. They're just playing this because they know us. And then they show up and they understand very quickly, this is where I'm going here. You know, within a few cards, it's the same thing. If you're drafting, Return to Ravnica stuff, and then you start seeing the extort stuff, and you start understanding that control piece and what that does. That's what we're trying to hit. We're trying to emulate the best of draft experiences that we've seen as well. So it looks like we've got McTavish is on the line. Hello, thanks for the pop-in. So, and I think it's an odd cube, but again, I feel like there's some concern of with people. I've read it many times that there's concern about going into what is called, you know, a themed cube or something like that, and that usually, you know, people think, like, okay, it's a vampire-themed cube, or it's the artifact-themed cube is the most... Every cube is themed. That's just the way it is. Your theme might be the most powerful cards in Magic. Maybe that's your theme. But everything falls under this same sort of spectrum, that you've got sort of an environment that you are trying to build gameplay in. And this speaks back to, general cube design theory that we talked about at the beginning when you're talking about, okay, how do I evaluate a card that is objectively better, but maybe fills a niche or is a playgroup favorite or something like that. Listen, if your objective is fun, and I think that's most people's objective when building a cube. If it's not, you're some sort of masochist. But it's a lot of work. So if it's not that, then I don't know what you're doing. But if the point is fun, then if you're making decisions based on that, and I think that most people would understand that. If are people you don't know, or you're going to your local LGS and trying to get them to draft some stuff, are they going to be less excited if it's an unpowered cube? It's possible. Not after a game or so. If what you've built up is something that's interesting, I think there needs to be a mix of, like, cards that people really haven't seen played before. Interesting mechanics, some synergies that maybe they haven't seen before, and providing support for that. Those are all aspects that go into like a cube experience that people remember, because you really are catering to people play, and there's different situations. Some people bring their cube to an LGS. Some people, it's just your tight knit play group like Andy and I. So it's an interesting balance.
Yeah, and really the question that was proposed today is a matter of balancing everything out. And the only way I can really think of doing it is by making sure that you can't balance something out if you don't know what your ratios are. So by incorporating this type of role modeling in your cube, or cube segmentation, what it does is it allows you to, like, one of the questions is, new cards come out, they're objectively more powerful. Well, I guess go into your cube and figure out where does this card, what role does this card actually play? Is it meant for part of the theme? Is it meant for one of my archetypes? Or is it just something that I want to have that's fun? And then you know how many slots you have open. It's faster to identify where you have that open space. Some kind of examples of that would be, obviously we can talk about this all day, but I think when you get into that, looking over my notes. Some of the examples of that is when we were talking about, we were finding that there was an issue in green and we didn't know necessarily what it was, but something in there seemed off. And once because we have it broken down this way, we found very quickly that we did not have any fight mechanics in green. There was, two cards that could actually straight up remove a creature or another permanent. And so it was pretty quick for us to identify that we needed to have a fight mechanic. And in there we also realized really quickly, well, we have probably too many mana ramp cards, or at least land search cards, in the cube. And so we quickly could assess the situation, swap out one of those land search cards, and throw in a few more fight mechanics.
Yeah, I believe it was Satishan Tactics for Farseek. Yeah. It was either that or the dredge guy.
One of those two. Life Alone?
Life from the Loam. Yep.
We also realized that Life from the Loam wasn't really fitting in any strategy in the cube. It was just a really good card that was in a lot of cubes, so that's how it found its way in there.
So, Andy, if you want to circle back around, I know this is a little late. Maybe you sort of answered it before, but Blind Piper here has asked after you made the categorization comment, he said, I think there are some really important exceptions to categorization for some cubes. I don't support Blink, but Parallax Wave is an amazing piece for aggro, pushing through damage or control buying time. So I think the interesting point to note there, that we're not saying that, Parallax Wave is Blink. I think you're right. You know, the comment was made that obviously that's a card for Blink. So And it is. It is an obvious card for Blink. It can be an obvious card for some other strategy as well, provided that you support that strategy. I don't know if you want to speak on that, Andy.
Well, really, it comes down to a matter. There are no, like I was saying at the beginning, a tool is only as useful as you use it. This is not a way of, let me reword it. So there are many cards that we would say, well, we're putting it in with the thought of this particular archetype. Obviously, when people get to the draft board, that's not how they're looking at the packs. They don't go through and look at each pack and say, well, yeah, I'm going to pick this because I'm going for the Blink deck necessarily. I mean, once it gets down to, like, pick 7, yeah, I could definitely see Parallax Wave working really well in my aggressive strategy. It's a versatile card. It's fun to play. But it's a matter of understanding, though. I think the reason why I brought up Parallax Wave is that if we took Parallax Wave out of our cube, we would probably have to replace it with a similar effect for the archetype to still function the way and the power level that we want it to function. It's a good point. I mean, this isn't hard and fast rules. It's a way for you not to look at 360 cards as just 360 cards. It's a way for you to look at 360 cards and know what category a card fits in, the role it plays in your cube in a quick manner, and also if you're working with someone else on your cube so they know and they're under the same page.
Yeah, and I think that's going to lead into, it's just understanding what it's for and what's supported, what's interesting in the cube. I've switched to the next slide a minute ago or so. So the just wanted to bring this up. So this is, I think, an example of card evaluation straight better. So we had an issue in black-white control that although black-white control wanted a mass removal effect, that straight mass removal, so what would oftentimes be considered the strictly good option, was not in this case. So black wanted a board wipe, but not a straight board wipe. So we started evaluating cards. Enter Killing Wave. And this was like my aha moment in cube developments when we made this swap. I thought, this is a very different card, filling the role of removal in a black-white control build much better than Damnation was, because Damnation, a lot of the opposing deck strategies that we have some sort of token sub-theme or something. Anyway, black-white was, you know, you're sitting on a few bombs. I think Andy and I just both found this very interesting, this card. So there's a lot of choice that happens here. There's a lot of building of understanding of play and draft and timing, everything. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this piece. This card is, it also adds an element of choice, which therefore is also learning on the part of the opposing player, which both of us found very interesting, that everybody's having to interact here. So we've got a super creature theme, mostly just, you know, bodies on the ground, turning sideways, and now, you know, Damnation comes in and game reset, let's play for another 15 minutes or something like that. Whereas this is something that requires you to evaluate a board state and make some decisions. And sometimes, it's really like that one creature that you decide to keep and pay the extra life may totally change the game. And casting Killing Wave on 1 black 3 versus 1 black 2 is a total game changer. It's a totally different game. So we found this to be a really interesting swap for our cube.
Yeah, I mean, also the benefit of, I think, because our, so the big reanimation deck is going to be black, white in our cube. But the targets that we have are not targets. Like, the targets that we have aren't cards that you can't cast easily. So we don't have, you know, Grizzlebrand in the cube. We don't have these cards that it's nearly impossible for you to play unless you try to cheat them into play somehow. We have powerful cards, but the point is that they're not going to win on the spot. So what Killing Wave does is, because we don't have that way for that deck necessarily just win outright as soon as it gets its combo, they have a hard time closing out the game, even though the game's pretty much won. They just have a hard time getting to the end. So what Killing Wave does is it, in essence, forces players to start paying life if they want to keep some of their creature out. So it makes the game go shorter because they're put in a worse position than you, because most of the time your creature's a lot bigger, but they usually have a lot of dirtlers sitting around at that point. So it just works so much perfectly in that deck than Damnation.
Oh yeah, every time. And it's weird because the comment in the chat, obviously, Killing Wave ? I'm going to have to give it some thought. So exactly, and yet somehow, because Andy and I had gone through the process of understanding what black white was, we've seen it played, we've seen it drafted. When we saw that Damnation wasn't a really great fit. It wasn't where it wanted to be. It was making games take longer because they were resetting. In a creature-based deck, you know, in a creature-based cube, those Wrath effects are big-time stalls. And we both evaluated that was not what that deck wanted. And there wasn't really any other archetype that wanted mass removal anyway in our cube. And then there are some, but there's other mass removal that we have other than just black mass removal. But then we both saw Killing Wave, and it was like immediately we both knew that was the card for our cube. And that's what's interesting for me, that when you've figured out what you're doing, the cards evaluate themselves. I don't know how to say it better than that, but like it invited us to let it make our cube better.
Right, that comes down to this, like, back to the question, how do you evaluate a card that's strictly better? Well, there you go. Is the strictly better is kind of a arguable term once you know what role that card, what deck that card's actually being played in. Now, is that the only deck that's being played in? No, but because we primarily are focusing on Damnation playing in that role, in that archetype, we can assess a better version for that deck in Killing Wave, where Damnation just plays it doesn't quite play a interactive game in any other deck. We also got the question from McTavish as far as Profane Command versus Killing Wave.
Right. Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I don't know that I would make the decision between the two because they are two different cards. I guess what we found interesting about Killing Wave really was that there was and we're not a normal cube, so it's not a bunch of guys who do this on a regular basis. There's people of, you know, various play levels. So there's a core of us that have been playing since June of 95-ish, you know, something like that, you know, Ice Age release date. And then there are people who have been playing since Innistrad or later. And there's people who have been playing since mid-90s, you know, late 90s who've had breaks for a while and whatever. So we'd like to use this as use cards as a way of like educating the playgroup and making you know to not punt and so but it just being able to evaluate board states and drafts is something interesting for us, and we just found Killing Wave, that is a mass removal that requires a lot of decisions on the part of both players. I thought, you say that choice is bad, but you know, that's generally accepted, that giving your opponent choice is bad, but not necessarily as a designer, and that's why there are choice cards, in Magic sets, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there are obviously some choice cards that aren't very good, but... This one's interesting, and it the skill level of it, it's kind of like the example. So I listen to Drive to Work a lot. That's the podcast that Mauro does. And in there, he kind of talked about how the difference between complexity and actual, like, evaluating a card. So if you take something like, what was that card from Innistrad that, when it died, they had to discard a card at random.
Black Cat.
Yeah, right. Black Cat. So for a new player, they look at it, well, that's cool. It can just block and they'll discard a card, or I can, attack him freely. They're not going to want to discard a card at random. And then, for a more experienced player, they're starting to look at, you know, timing out exactly when they want that card to die, or maybe they're drafting some sort of sacrifice effect so they can do it exactly at the point that they need to do it. So, you know, there's one or two cards in their hand, or they, you know, somehow assess that I can only lose this game if he has this card. So that's the time I'm going to knock off Black Cat. And this card's the same way, where Damnation didn't have any choice. Killing Wave, because it has more choice, for a more experienced player, they can assess the situation and make a better play than you would ever be able to make with Damnation.
Right.
At least in our cube.
Yeah, no, in fact, there's a lot of choice, there's a lot of interaction, and in most cases, the deck that wants Damnation will come out ahead better with Killing Wave, with this probably the same result in less time, is what I've seen so far. So we'll let you know how it goes. We've got actually we draft online because we're all like parents and stuff. So we have to somehow convince our wives to give us 5 hours every 2 months or so to get together on a Sunday afternoon to cube draft. So to save time, we draft on Friday nights, before we cube at about 9 p.m., and then we do all the card pulls, and we're ready to go on Sunday at 12:30 every time. So we'll let you know how this goes, and also if you missed the beginning of the cast, we had a very, very quick 90-card extension edition that that we've been doing because our cube playgroup is growing, and so we started with 360. We're probably not always going to be 10 people, but we'd like to have the ability to scale up and not turn down people to play. We might do a cast on that experience, doing the 90-card extension, but that's where we're at now. I don't know. Andy, was there another piece that we were going to go into here? I don't think so.
I think, well, we actually have Blind Piper in the cube, so if we didn't answer his question correctly, he can let us know. I think we answered his question correctly. I mean, like, we went over the competitive, keeping competitive environment and having, you know, valuing your audience and whatnot, synergies, you know, really all comes down to a balance. I don't know, there's probably some better ways of doing it, but these are tools that have worked really well for us. Even the thing like we did the extension. That's how we added the extension, was breaking it down into sections. And from there we knew, okay, well, need to have at least one more good card in each color. We need to have at least this many of the theme so we can maintain the theme in our cube. We need to have so many cards for each different archetype in each color. It made it go a lot faster. There would be no way we could have actually had a good extension in the period of time that we had. We had like really a week.
Yeah, it was, well, it was like, no, you're exaggerating. It was at least 9 days. So 9 days to add 90 cards to our themed cube counters matter. So it's been an interesting experience. But I would say last question we can go ahead and answer, and then we're going to go into the next up stuff for our next cast and contact information and who's a what's it. So, Blind Piper also mentioned, how long do you leave a questionable card in the cube to thoroughly test it? And I think the answer to that is as long as the card can hide from you. because I was just today, I was going through and then printing out some sheets of paper for organizing the cube after we drafted, and once again, saw Hell's Caretaker just sitting there. He's very good. He's very good at hiding from me. He's still there.
I think day one we had said we're going to take out Hell's Caretaker.
Yeah, I know. It's like after our first draft, but no, we're in a weird situation because we don't play that often, honestly. We talk about a lot, we do test drafts and stuff like that, but we just there's a lot of time constraints. We both have very demanding jobs, so we don't get a lot of time. So if you're playing every weekend, you can start, you can put things in, you know, take them out. I mean, I was listening to, Usman was saying, you know, just try it on one of their recent casts. What's their podcast? The Third Power, right? That's Usman. Yeah.
Right.
So he was saying, just try it, just throw it in, you know, and we just don't have that liberty because, you know, with taking cards out and putting them in, you know, we don't, every, you know, 4 months, we're getting two opportunities to possibly play it, and it all depends on the chance of what a pack looks like and whether or not it ends up on a sideboard because something's not getting played. So we're pretty careful about that, but I guess.
One thing we do is that we have everyone submit their deck lists before the draft. So if it's never getting drafted, at some point you do have to concede to taking out a card, but that's
even
also
if it's great. Even if it's great, right? You know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, sometimes you just have to force draft it and prove that it's great. But I will say, like we brought up in the cube segmentation that Dan was talking about, I like to place Easter eggs in the cube for those cards that after a person's been playing your cube enough, they can all of a sudden, you know, try to go a completely different archetype. Like, there are no cards that are put in our cube for what I like to call those Easter egg cards. They're merely there for someone to see if they can break it. And I think those are type of the cards that you're might be talking about, is those questionable cards that aren't, they don't inherently do something that's amazing, and maybe people don't necessarily draft it, but I'll tell you what, when I drafted River Kelpie, that deck was awesome. I just went off.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's weird. It's a weird balance, because I think there's two different things. There's two different categories of questionable cards. Like, there's the questionable cards that, like, nobody's playing this card. You know, those are your, exactly, your, they might be an Easter egg card, and they might just be a card that people have a difficult time navigating. I mean, you know, Gifts Ungiven is an example of a card. If you have a play group of a certain level, maybe it's not just not getting played because they don't, you know, it's not getting drafted as much as it should, because it's super powerful. But it might not make it there, and that's a type of questionable card. Another type of questionable card is a card that you are questioning as the person running the cube whether or not it is a fit. And that's a different argument, and I think the answer to that is if you don't think that it's fun, you should just take it out. There's plenty of fun cards in Magic. Just take it out. So,
and keeping track of if your play group's not playing it, or they keep complaining about this card just ending in bad board states, then at some point you have to swap it out, see if you find a better fit.
Right. So we're going to wrap it up here. Apparently our audio is choppy as well. I thought it was just our video at first, but we have to get a dedicated Twitch cast workstation here. So our next cast is going to be Thursday, May 21st at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, as normal. We're going to be covering Fall of the Guilds, which is a theme hinting piece, where we talk about exactly like giving some hints to your drafters, let them know what's going on as they're drafting, what's supported. We're going to show our examples of green-white tokens, black-white control. I'm going to go through a couple of cube design things, and we're going to do a couple card swaps, and you better believe that Hell's Caretaker is going to be in that list. You can contact us at plaidmagic@outlook.com or Twitter at plaidmagic. We have our Blogspot blog at iplaidmagic.blogspot.com. We'll have more links. There's a ton of stuff and links to our various social media outlets on our Twitch page. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a good evening. Oh,
sweet. One thing we forgot. If you want to listen to us talk about something in an environment we aren't exactly comfortable in, we did guest star on another podcast on MTGcast this last week. It's called Commander HQ.
Yes, almost forgot, because we're so much over our time frame that we're going to do.
Okay.
Yeah, those of you who play Commander, they play in our cube, and we, you know, last Sunday we had the opportunity to join them on their MTGcast podcast called Commander HQ. One of them is a longtime friend of ours from, you know, mid-90s. The other one is a good friend of Andy's I've met recently, Nate.
Yeah.
Them up. I will add a link to their MTGcast page on our site.
All right.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a good evening. And we'll have it on YouTube laters. Good night.